Fun Ideas Productions presents the Fun Ideas Podcast.
I'm having so much more fun now.
Hi, this is Mark Arnold, and welcome to Fun Ideas Podcast number 238. The Fun Ideas Podcast is brought to you in part by Freaky Magazine. I contribute material to every issue, so give it a try.
Hey kids, have you read Freaky? The magazine of weird humor for freaks like you. Freaky Magazine is a way-out collection of weirdo comics, kooky gags, photo funnies, social satire, and surreal collage. 52 pages of insanity in the tradition of magazines of yore like Cracked, Blob, and Zap. Special offer for Fun Ideas listeners, get a free sample copy in the mail, made of smelly newsprint and smudgy ink the old-fashioned way. Just message your mailing address to theslowpoisoner@gmail.com. That's theslowpoisoner@gmail.com while supplies last.
You remember them from your childhood. Casper the Friendly Ghost, Richie Rich, Hot Stuff, Baby Huey, Sad Sack and Little Audrey. You read them in comic books and saw them on television and in the movies. Now you can read about how they and other Harvey comic characters were created in two great books from Mark Arnold and Fun Ideas Productions, The Best of Harveyville Fun Times and The Harvey Comic Companion. Both are available from Amazon. The Companion is also available from Bear Manor Media. They are available in hardcover, paperback, and ebook versions. Order your copies today.
Friends, have you tried Lee's Comics? Lee's Comics is better than the leading comic book store. Wait a minute. Lee's Comics is the leading comic book store. Based on arbitrary standards set by Lee Hester himself.
Lee's Comics was named as one of the 21 best online dealers by PopOptique.com. To shop the Lee's Comics eBay store, go to eBay and search for Lee's Comics, Inc. That's LEESCOMICSINC, period. Don't forget the period. Mention the Fun Ideas Podcast when you order, and you'll receive a free bonus gift. I plan to go on Charles F. Rosenay's Magical History Tour in 2024. And here is Charles to talk about it.
Hey, this is Charles Rosenay, sometime guest here on the Fun Ideas Podcast. Have you ever thought of taking a Beatles tour to Liverpool? Well, I host and organize the Magical History Tour every summer, www.liverpooltours.com. But I'm here to tell you about two other things. My books! Yes, Mark isn't the only author. I've recently published the book of Top 10 Beatles Lists, where 64 celebrities gave their top 10 favorite Beatles-themed lists with reasons why, and illustrations and photos and all kind of fun stuff. Please check it out, www.bookoftop10beatleslists.com. It's the follow-up to www.bookoftop10horrorlists.com, where 100 celebrities gave their favorite horror lists. Enjoy the upcoming show, and thank you for listening to my ad.
In Fun Ideas Productions news, progress is being made on publishing my upcoming Turtles and Mad books. Hopefully they will be out by the end of 2023 or the beginning of 2024. My latest books that are published include my books on Pac-Man, the stars of Walt Disney Productions, the revised second edition of my Monkeys book with Michael A. Ventrella called Long Title, and the TTV scrapbook. You can buy them all on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or directly from Bear Manor Media. If you'd like a signed book, contact me at funideas.mark@gmail.com or purchase your book through my listings on eBay. I'm still working on my TV Cartoons at Time Forgot book, as well as articles about the Harvey implosion and Aunt Archie's Mr. Weatherby. On today's show, we have the author of the very first book about Shemp of the Three Stooges called Shemp Howard, Much More Than a Stooge. Here he is, Jeff Dale.
Hi, this is Mark Arnold with yet another episode of the Fun Ideas Podcast, and today I have another author, and he's written a book about this gentleman behind me, Shemp. And his name is Jeff Dale. The book is called Shemp Howard, Much More Than a Stooge. I think I read it right. I put the picture back here, but it cut the title off. So I go,
oh, okay.
You know, I didn't, but you know, it looks good. You know, I think it focuses on faces more than titles. So how are you today?
I'm good. It's chilly up here in Canada, but I don't know. Maybe it's chilly down there too.
I'm in Oregon. Yeah, it's kind of chilly right now, you know, but there's a couple weeks ago, it was chilly here and the rest of the country, they kept saying the U.S. that is heat wave. And it's like, not here, you know, it was in the teens Fahrenheit. So you know, there we go.
Oh yes, Fahrenheit. Yes. We go Celsius or centigrade. However, I'm used to Fahrenheit, so I always translate it.
Yeah. So the teens Fahrenheit is probably like 30, 40, something like that. Celsius, something like, or did I go the wrong direction?
Yeah, actually, the Celsius right now to be about 5 degrees. So
okay. I went the wrong way. Yeah.
36, about 36 degrees. It's quite chilly.
So this is off the topic, but since you're from Canada, you're probably aware of these guys.
And since Shemp didn't like traveling, he didn't have to bother coming up here. So.
Now, this is quite off the topic, but you are Canadian and you probably know these guys, Bob and Doug McKenzie from SCTV. And if you don't, well.
Oh, I do.
They're funny. Yes. Okay. But anyway.
I don't know them personally.
No, but the connection is about temperatures. They said if you want to translate from Celsius to Fahrenheit, just double it and add 30. Now, I don't know if that's accurate, but, you know, it's like.
Actually, you take the temperature, you multiply it by 9 over 5, then you add 32.
Okay.
Something like that. I have no All idea. Right.
All I know,
do it all the time.
All I know is cold.
Yeah, it is.
Anyway, I think I read that you're originally from England. Is that correct?
I was born in London, England, and moved to Canada 1955. So actually, I moved and the day we landed in New York City. I think it was 2 days later or something like that. Shemp died.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There's a link. So in actually my introduction in the book, I do mention that I was on the Queen Mary with my mom. I was on the top bank throwing up over onto her doing a stooge like thing. And when we landed, because my father was already over here in Canada. And when we landed, I didn't know this at the time, but apparently it was a few days later, Shemp Howard died. So there's the link in some sort of a mysterious fashion. And I was destined to write a book on Shemp. And as it turns out, I'm apparently the first one to do it. Mm-hmm. So.
And we will talk about another one coming up by somebody else, but I'll mention that later. But anyway,
I do know.
I have questions about that too. But anyway, we'll go on to that later. What I wanted to know is, as an American, I always think Canada is pretty much like the U.S. most of the time.
Yes.
But with something like Three Stooges, which seems like so quintessential American,
it is.
It's very New York. It's very East Coast. It's very, you know, whatever. Did that translate well to the places where you lived, or how did you experience your Stooges over the years?
Well, Stooges over the years for me, my parents, of course, were not keen on me watching it because they thought it was too violent. And this is what I find hysterically funny now, is that they find that violent, which is sort of comic book violence, and they're no longer alive. And I'm just wondering what they think about people being decimated by nuclear devices, sliced and diced here, there, and everywhere. I mean, television and movies in particular are so violent now. It's this is comical. I mean, you no one who can. So basically, there was a show from Channel 7 in Buffalo that we used to tune into. It was the gent actually did the weather and the news, Tom Joles, but he was also Commander Tom. Mm. And Commander Tom, fortunately, had some Stooge material. So in 1958, when they released all this material of theirs, on a television contract, a deal with, I don't know, whatever distributor it was, I started to sneak peeks around about 4-ish in the afternoon at Curly, Larry, Moe, and occasionally Shemp. And the Shemp started to grow a little more and more. A lot of people would kind of complain about that. And my actual reaction, first of all, was, I don't know, I like Shemp. He's interesting. He looks somewhat different, although he looks a fair bit like Moe. And so I gravitated right from the start to actually to Shemp and Larry. Those were my favorites. Mm-hmm. And interestingly enough, they had something very much in common. Larry was an amateur boxer during his teen years. Kid Ross had one professional fight until his father dragged him out of the ring by his ear. And of course, Shemp was a lifelong absolute boxing fanatic and absolutely wonderful. And as it turns out, I should have told my father this because my father was a fanatic on boxing. And the Stooges never appeared in our lives in England at all. I don't know how well known they are, but they're well known in some strange places around the world.
Right.
Very strange, you know.
Yeah.
But that's how I was introduced, through Commander Tom. And I've loved the Stooges from day one. I just think they don't get anywhere near the credit they deserve, although, not giving anything too much away, a couple of the academics that I spoke to in the book, the book is structured in a rather unusual way. But anyway, they said it's really unusual. It's a bit sad when I asked the students, because this is basically a sort of a nostalgic course one gent was talking about, was teaching. And he asked, you know, how many here know the Marx Brothers? And no hands go up. Alvin Costello? No. Lauren Hardy? Three Stooges, the whole place, every hand went up, including women. And that's, I don't like that really, because I don't like to think that these other great comics are being forgotten. However, it does say something, that there's something remarkably durable about Three Stooges.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me pleased. And it also, much as a lot of folks say, well, you know, they weren't the originators of that kind of humor, and they weren't innovators in that. And my answer to that is no, perhaps not, but they were awfully good at it.
Yeah.
And they set the standard, and they were extremely popular then, and they weren't a kid's act. This is the thing too that's so funny.
Yeah.
Because by the 50s, by 58, when they were released on television, and they were apparently in the States being shown a lot on movies, you know, like drive-in theaters and that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were suddenly becoming a kid's act. And
right.
The kids, so there's Dad saying, oh, this is great. You know, I love these guys, and my kids love them too. And so that's some of the early stuff for me, and I just went from there.
Okay. I think similarly, I'll tell you my brief story is, like, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, but the first time I saw Three Stooges was when I moved down to Southern California, and they were showing them on just TV. No host, it was just showing the old shorts. And
yes.
My dad had seen them in the theaters and all that stuff, the shorts, not the live act or anything. And so he says, oh yeah, these are the Three Stooges. They made shorts for years. And, you know, they typically show the Curly ones. And then one day they had Shemp on one of them. And I go, who's that guy? You know, and my dad said, well, at one point my dad got it wrong, but he's just going by what he remembers. He goes, well, Curly died and they replaced him, you know. And I go, oh, okay, you know, it wasn't totally true, it was eventually, but you know, yeah. But you know, it's like and then somewhere along the line they showed a Joe Besser one, and I go, who's that guy? And then I go, oh, I know who he is because he did voices on cartoons when I was watching TV. And so I knew him that way. And it's like, why did they get him in there? You know, and it's like, what happened to Shep? And then in the mid-70s, when Larry and Mo both passed away, I have the obituary to this day on a piece of paper for Mo, clipped out of the Los Angeles Times. And it says, you know, it was May 75. It says, Curly died in 1952. Fine died last January. And so that led me to believe, oh, all the other ones are still alive because they didn't mention it. So I thought Shemp was alive, but he just was retired or something like that until one of those Stooges books came out in the early 80s that said their birth and death dates. And I go, oh, Shemp's dead. I didn't know that. So that's my story of getting into the Stooges. You know.
Well, that's good. I mean, everyone has a different way. And as I say, it's remarkable just how incredibly popular they still are. Yeah. I mean, you know, to be honest, I mean, there's Stooges film fests all over. In fact, in Buffalo, I was, I guess, the special guest. I got to introduce a Shemp short, and I was wearing my John Lennon white suit with my Shemp shirt on, and that was great. I said, I'm writing the first book ever written on Shemp, and I don't know when it's going to be out. It's going to be out hopefully soon. But anyway, it's now out, and I'm going to be going back to Buffalo in April and hopefully taking some books with me and try to flog them as a good salesperson, a Stooge salesperson would do. And but it's a fascinating story. And this is, and as you can imagine, the fact that they started, really, Ted Healy sort of got the ball rolling in 1923, which just happens to be the century mark for the beginnings of the Three Stooges. Right. And, you know, I thought to myself, it's a full century. And well, when I started, it wasn't, but it's closing in.
It took me 100 years to write this book.
Yeah, it almost took me that long. And this is what I love to tell people. This is a book I almost died for, and that's the truth. Mm-hmm. 2 years ago, I almost died from sepsis. Ooh. And I was saying to my wife, well, you know, when I came through, I said, well, now I can actually finish the book because I'm going to live, apparently, for a little while longer. So, but I just thought to myself, initially, I thought that there's no book on Shemp. And I don't understand this. Yeah. For my reading of the situation, he was, in fact, if not the original, which I believe his wife is right, and he is the original, he was certainly one of the originals, one of the original two with Mo.
Yeah.
Why is there no book written on him? Yeah. I don't understand. And I knew he was in other films because cable had come out over the years. And I used to watch the Turner Broadcasting. What is it? TMC?
TMC, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I really love. And every so often I watch a movie and I say, what's that? That's Shemp Howard. What's he doing? So I started to collect some information. When I started actually doing this book on my own, I found out that he has been in 105 quote unquote known films, which means there could be another 5 or 10 out there he's been in.
Yeah.
By far the most prolific of anyone in terms of solo efforts. And so I started writing, and then lo and behold, and it wasn't me, because I thought, well, I'm never going to get a publisher for this because, you know, it's just not happening. I'm Canadian. And Ben gets a hold of me out of the blue. Not quite sure how this happened. I was quite startled because I thought, oh, well, this is wonderful. An American publisher, and did my homework. He's quite well known. Got some nice books out. And I might get paid in American money, which is worth a lot more than ours. So I've been doing quite the sales job lately because, number one, I really, really truthfully, because my goal is not just to make money. My goal is to say to people, let's give some cheers to Shemp because he really did a lot of good things and he was the original. And let's find out more about him. Yeah. And I've had an absolute ball doing this, you know, when I wasn't in the hospital dying. And that's not the end of it. I also had 4 operations during the pandemic, you know, so I wasn't working then. Nothing to do with COVID.
Did you get COVID at all, too?
I didn't get COVID. Wow. I get everything. I have the... I'm remarkable, you know. Some people say I don't look that old for my age, you know, which is 73 next month. Mm-hmm. And say, well, you look really young. I said, would you like to see my x-rays? I am Nosferatu. Mm-hmm. I am the young head. Anyway, this was like my main project in life. I really want to get this done. I really want to make it as good as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. And the long and short of it is that it's 396 pages, which I really didn't think I was going to do that much. And I tried to develop it in such a way that people not only got a sense of what he did as a stooge and as a solo actor as well, but just something about him. And that maybe this would interest people in saying, well, he was an interesting character. The brothers all loved each other, and they also really loved Larry Fine. Or mm-hmm. Louis Weinberg, as he really yes. was.
Well, they all had assumed names. I mean, Shemp wasn't Shemp.
Shemp was Samuel. And if you want to go back to it, in the Jewish name, he would be Shmuel, mm-hmm. which is spelled one of two ways, which basically means Samuel. And of course, Mo was Harry Moses. And so there you go.
Yeah.
But and by the way, just in case anyone is interested, my grandfather, name was Isaac Emanuel Blumenthal. And Blumenthal from the Jewish translate to either Flower Valley, which is more commonly used, or Flower Dale. So here I am. My grandfather, Isaac Emanuel Blumenthal, became William Dale. And hence, you know, and if I wasn't, I'd be sitting here today talking to you as Jeffrey Robert Blumenthal. So
certainly a shorter name depending on the book.
And it's been wonderful because it's been a look for me at the history too, not mm-hmm. just of Shem, but the fact that all these Jewish families around the turn of the century and just before that, that were coming over from Eastern Europe because of persecution and all the rest. It's fascinating that all of a sudden, out of that immigration, that massive immigration into the States, the numbers are in my book, but anyway, mm-hmm. Developed this incredible show business community from, you know, them parenting all these individuals, you know, and all of a sudden, whether people knew it because they were all changing their names at one point, they were all pretty much all Jewish. The best boxers in the United States during the 30s and some of the 40s were Jewish. Benny Leonard, people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fascinating. So mm-hmm. and where they lived, you know, and who their neighbors were. Just wonderful.
Now, when did you become a fan of Shemp, and when did you start writing this book?
I became a fan of Shemp, and this is a little bit of an exaggeration, but I'm thinking it was probably I was 10 years old, because like I said, I am fairly ancient. And 1958, I was eight. I was, you know, and by the way, this is one thing, get this straight to everyone listening, that I actually like, for my own specific reasons, I like all six of them. Yeah. You know, my favorites are not really the last two. However, they play an important part in the fact that this group is 100 years all through. So I love them all for whatever reason. I didn't start writing the book. I threw the idea out to a lot of people and no one bit. And I thought, okay, this was about 2014. Mm-hmm. And this was a strange part of my life because, as I said, I was going through various ailments and not necessarily because I was getting old and old, because apparently for me, getting old, I was turning 27 because that's when it all started. So I had this thing in my head. I've been a journalist now for 51 years. And so I've been writing a lot, but I thought I want to write some books. I've done some, but I want to write at least one that I can say, I'm kind of proud of this. And it actually means something to me. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say, book once, dude. Just, you know, this is not about curing cancer or solving the international global crisis from various wars and the like. However, it's important. It is a really important piece of history. And I just felt I got to be the first one to do this.
Yeah.
And by the way, I do know there's another gentleman out there who's going to be right.
I can mention it if you don't mind. I mean, you know, because I'll be buying his book too. He's been on the podcast before you, but he talked about a different book. Bert Kearns is working on a Shemp book.
Yes.
And at the time, I kind of knew you were working on one, but you know, if it wasn't out yet, so you know. I know how, because I've written books myself, you want to be first, but it's not always a guarantee. You know, it's like, you know, you might be doing more research or things happen in your life, like you were talking about ailments and things like that. And, you know, for whatever reason. But I will say this, take heart. I think that there is room in this world for two Shemp books, especially when there's zero for so long. So, I mean, there's two Larry books and there's, you know, a couple more.
As long as he graciously gives me a little bit of time before he releases his, I don't know when it's coming out.
Yeah, I think he's probably another year off, unless he just cribs out everything out of your book.
I wish, to be honest, him all the best because I agree with you 100%. We need this, and I've got two other books in the. Maybe you'll be interviewing me about those in a little while, but. I don't want to give them away yet.
Okay.
One of them actually is another first. So giving Ben a lot of
Curly Joe. No. There's still not a Curly Joe. Anyway, I know one other person besides myself that would buy a Curly Joe book. Phil Hall. He loves Curly Joe, and he's not being sarcastic about it. He loves him.
Phil actually interviewed me. A few weeks ago, he's my first. I got a bunch. I like Phil. He's a very nice guy. And did you interview me before, or is this the first time?
I've never interviewed you before, but I've interviewed a lot of people. You know, like you mentioned Nick Santa Maria. I've interviewed him a few times.
Oh, Nick.
Bill Cacera, I've had on the show. You know, so like everybody's been on the show, but you. So I know peripherally. Yeah. We run in similar circuits.
Even Bill, I've never met Bill, and I talk a lot. We talk all the time, and great guy. I mean, he's even younger than me. I said the whole damn world is younger than me, but I thought, you know, I don't care. As long as I'm the first temp author out there, I'm really happy. Yeah. And there are some things about him that people don't know. I got a comment from someone who's bought the book, and basically, I can't remember his name. And he said, I thought I knew everything about the Stooges. And I thought, I didn't know any of these things about the show. And they're not that difficult to find. But there are different interpretations out there. And it's kind of nice that I think we've got it. I think we've nailed it this time. That we're not going with the rumors out there about him.
Yeah.
And and I'm not going to say he is, in fact, the tallest Stooge at 5'7". But I think he's the tallest at 5'6". I'm thinking 5'7", stretching a little. Curly, I think, was
in heels.
in heels. But anyway, and I find too, and I'm getting a lot of comments online, which I'm very heartened about because I've always believed this. Women do not hate Three Stooges.
No.
And there's one very good reason, and they'll tell you this if you can get this out of them, that Stooges are Stooges. And in the shorts, they always lose. Doesn't matter what they do. The women, though, especially the really attractive starlets they had, they always win.
Yes.
And they're never mistreated by the Stooges. They're actually quite idolized by the Stooges. And the fact is, women are really what Stooges really want to worship, but they really can't. And I said, I know lots of women, in fact, and I also know lots of women who like to stick their foot out in front of their children, trip them, and then laugh hysterically because they like the Stooges. It's true incident.
The only anti-women thing I can think of, and it's just cheap comedy, it's fun, is like they'll be the one with where they'll have the veils and they'll reveal their faces, and the first one says, "I'm Aggie, I'm Maggie," and the third one is ugly, "I'm Baggy." You know, it's like things like that. You know, but like the one that is And I'll ask you this too. You can answer it now or later.
Oh, yes.
My favorite Shemp one, and probably my favorite Three Stooges of all time, is Brideless Groom. I just love that short.
Christine McIntyre.
Yes. And but if you talk about women getting the upper hand, you know, there's scenes where they have guns and the bear traps and other things. The women don't get caught up in all that stuff. The Stooges get clobbered by it all.
You know? One woman has Shemp's head in a vise, and she's turning as he's screaming for air.
Are you going to marry me? Never! And then he finally agrees. Okay.
That's another thing, too. I realized that during the Shemp's heyday with the Stooges, which really I think was in the earlier years, but anyway, during the 50s, the late 40s and early 50s when he came back, the budgets were being cut. There were much less on-location shooting, so it's a lot of studio and set work and that. The writing, they were doing even more remakes and copies than they did earlier, because everyone was remaking their own stuff. Yeah. But there was like something that had been done three or four times. However, Shemp managed to come up with many of his 70 little shorts that he did with them during that period. They were actually really good because he put like 120% effort into those.
Yeah.
So did they all, you know?
I think it's because he understood it, you know, probably better. This is why maybe Joe Besser and Joe Derita get such a bad rap, is, you know, they weren't watching them for 20, 30 years like everybody else to get the subtle nuances of how Stooges worked. So they had to kind of learn on the job. Whereas somebody like Shemp, he was there before Curly. And so I had this argument with somebody one day who will remain nameless, but he goes, I only like the original Three Stooges. And I go, oh, so that means you like Shemp. And he goes, no, Curly. And I go, Curly wasn't original Three Stooges. He replaced Shemp. What? You know, and it's like he wasn't even thinking about the Ted Healy days or anything. He was just a Columbia short. So,
That's getting back to that particular point, too, which I think is really interesting. One of the reasons that my book is saying he's not an original, I changed that on the title, is the original member, is based largely on what, there it is right there, it's based largely on what his wife, I don't know what to call her, Gertrude or Babe, I'll call her Babe, what she said, and by the way, she spoke on a number of occasions to another author, Steve Cox, another former Canadian, by the way, who moved down there. So nice guy, very nice, got some wonderful photos from him for the book. Mm-hmm. He said, basically, well, she said, look, Mo was, a childhood friend of Ted Healy's, which is true. He says, you look from 1923 all through the early years, whose name comes up the most, right from the beginning, right to the end, before, you know, Larry even joined, it was Shemp. He was always there. Mo went back to the real estate business at one point for a couple of years. It was Shemp. So she, in a sense, is saying he was the original professional stooge.
Yeah.
Whether Mo got up there on stage and joked around with Ted Healy and just did, I don't know, skits and didn't get paid or whatever, that's nice, but it's not really him being the original stooge. It is Shemp. And she made a good point, you know? And she's the one who basically, again, I'm going on my information, that, and it wasn't like that they hated Ted Healy beyond belief, because that, a lot of that is really, really exaggerated to the extent that it's not even truth. There were some issues. However, she basically said, look, you're talented enough. Why don't you just go out there and be solo? Give it a try. Do it. And lo and behold, he did it. And some of the stuff wasn't particularly great, but I'll tell you what, one thing for Vitaphone that I think is absolutely fabulous, because he's such a boxing fan, is the Joe Palooka series. His Nobby Walsh, that's absolutely perfect, because he knows the patter. He knows all about fighters, how it is around the ringside. And essentially, his role, he became the star of that. I know he was not the star. But if all the attention was basically paid towards Shemp. Yeah. And for good reason, he was that good. And of course, then he ends up in Hollywood after that. I loved it. I loved the Joel Palooka series. I thought it was fun.
Yep.
So, and Shemp the star.
I'll go through a few of those films, not just Joe Palooka, but let me ask you this first. Is there any untruths that you've discovered that, you know, everybody accepts as gospel and it's really not true? And conversely, is there anything you discovered that has never been presented in any Stooge book or any Stooge biography, documentary, or anything that just was like, wow, I didn't know that?
That's a good question. Your last question, I'm not sure that I can answer, because I did a lot of research, you know, and that doesn't mean just reading other people's books, although I did.
So well, I'm not pretty sure.
there are some very, very original things in the book, and I'm not going to tell anyone. There are two completely, well, there's one especially that's a completely original illustration by a really good illustrator that no one has ever seen. He did it for me for the book. If I mention the two words Shemp instead, the guy who created that did this. And well, there is something that I don't think has ever been in any other book, that the original, because one of the people in my book is Bob Gale, who wrote all the Back to the Future books. He and the other, his director buddy, Robert, how do you pronounce it? Zemeckis. Yeah, I always get that wrong. Anyway, they love Shemp. They're massive Shemp fans. I don't think that's been in any book. And on top of that, they both wanted, and had it original, their idea was, okay, Doc Brown's animal assistant is going to be Shemp the Chimp, okay? It's going to be Shemp the Chimp. And, you know, they loved it, but one of the big wigs said, yeah, you got to be kidding. Chimp movies don't make any money. And so, of course, Bob said, well, what about Clint Eastwood? And he said, no, that's an orangutan. That's not a chimp. Anyway, so then I got talked out of it. And but anyway, so I have a picture there, you know, with the original cast and illustration. And that's fun. As for, let's see, what are the other things, the untruths? Well, a lot of the untruths tend to revolve around Ted Healy. He did never, ever try to blow up the building that the Stooges were in or lock them in. I mean, there were reports on this. And with the advent of the internet, of course, there's even more half-truths, non-truths, complete fabrications. You know, they say that it's like when you're on the internet, it's like being under an umbrella and a shower of information pouring over your head, and also misinformation.
Right.
So a lot of what was said about Ted Healy was absolutely, completely untrue. He had his own issues, but he was absolutely the most, pretty much, he was what they would probably call now, he'd be a superstar.
Yeah.
He was everywhere. He taught them everything. And Shemp said in one section, which is in another book, Ted Healy is the funniest person I've ever met.
Yeah. And I changed my mind about him because I didn't know anything about him. He just seemed like, originally in my head, any film I saw him in, Ted Healy was just this boisterous blowhard, and he didn't add anything to the act. But, you know, in reading, there's a biography now, and then Gary Lassen's book about the Stooges tours, which is an excellent book, had him on the show too. You know, you start understanding, you know, that he was a more well-rounded character and not just a one-note person, you know.
Yeah. So. And so there are a lot of things. I hope what I try to do in some sense is to modify people's misconceptions. I'll give you one, actually, which it has been in the books, I believe, but I think I do a little more of an exploration of it in a few paragraphs. There's a film that came out called Convention Girl in 1935. And it's the first time that Shemp and any of the Stooges played it completely straight. There were some issues with the movie because, number one, it came out after the code, the Hays Code, of course. So there was not going to be all the sort of shenanigans, the violence, the sexy starlets and all the rest that they were used to in the early 30s, which is too bad. So the movie itself, I used to be a film critic, by the way, so I'm going to give it no, I don't want to get sued by the late Siskel and Ebert, but I give this movie sort of a marginal thumbs up for one reason. Most of the cast doesn't have much dialogue to go with. It's kind of interesting, but then all of a sudden out of the blue, Shemp shows up and quite nicely dressed. I would say middle to small town hood, although he's in Atlantic City, so he's got some pretensions. He's nasty. He's completely nasty. He's smoking cigarettes, not his cigars. Yep. He's an embezzler. He's a crook. And on top of that, he shoots. He tries to kill his partner. So every time Shemp's on the scene, I'm thinking, this is great. And he's not doing any comedic shtick whatsoever. I just wish someone else would have said, you know something, there's a lot of people in that generation who are very good at doing comedy and also doing drama, especially gangster films. And Shemp was one of them. But for some reason, no one took him up on that at any point. And that was the only film that I can see, other than a few sort of more straight moments he had in other films. But this, so that's a highlight for me. Mm-hmm. Not a particularly great movie, but boy, really fine performance by him. Mm-hmm. And
what's the name of that one again? I don't know if I've seen that one.
Convention Girl. And this is a really easy place to go to it. Convention Girl, 1935. Google it and it'll come up on YouTube. Okay. The print is not very good. I have a copy of it. By the way, I now have as many Shemp movies and Stooges movies as any other particular actor. We've got about 700 films here. And
you've seen everything Shemp's done that you know about.
Almost everything. There's a couple that I missed because I had trouble tracking them down. And I don't know why I did, because during the pandemic, it was quite easy to find these films. But some of them, you know, some of the shorts, here's another quote, and it may or may not have been used anywhere else. Bud Abbott, basically, he just essentially what he said, and I'm paraphrasing it somewhat, is Shemp is one of the greats out there. Unfortunately, he's been doing all these crappy shorts for Columbia and just being wasted. So he really thought, and any issue about, again, I hope again I contradict it, there was no issue between Lou Costello and Shemp. In fact, Lou Costello with his wife and one of his kids used to show up at their famous house parties. And so Abbott and Costello used him in five films, including the last.
Was it five? Oh, okay. Yeah. Because I kind of quickly scanned the list and I just wrote about two of them because I know Africa Screams and Buck Privates. Those are the ones that.
Oh, that's I have a list
prominently. Here, yeah. So yeah, if you have all of them.
there's five, but I'm not sure. I'd have to go back to. Let me see. Where are we? I shouldn't be doing this. This is a completely unprofessional. there's the Buck Privates.
Right.
Oh, let me see. Going down another. In the Navy. Andrew's Sisters. He did some great stuff. Shemp did with them. Hold That Ghost.
Okay. I did write that one down on my list, yeah.
Okay. Private Buckaroo, of course, that was with the Andrew's Sisters and others. And then, as you said, the last one, the independent one, Africa Screams. Yeah, there were five in total.
Yeah, and, it seems like they wouldn't keep it. I don't know. Did Abbott and Costello have any say so who appeared in their films?
That's up for debate. From what I understand, they did like having people in their films. I don't know if they had any. It's like people really exaggerate how much power W.C. Fields had over edits and that. I mean, he didn't tell the editors what to do. He would tell them what he didn't like. And sometimes it would get edited out. That's another issue there, that apparently Shemp was really upset about everything that had been cut out of his role in the bank, Dick,
right.
Which, interestingly enough, Roger Ebert says is W.C. Fields' greatest film. And it's got been put in all kinds of institutionalized, files. So there were a lot of things. Costello, no, they had no beef. Abbott really admired Shemp. And apparently, even though Fields was bitching about Shemp throwing in all these ad-libs during that, which were not included, he and Shemp got together for martinis. And I got that from WC's grandson. And he said, no, he said WC never associated with comedians, particularly that wasn't his crowd. He called Charlie Chaplin to leave something to the effect of that goddamn ballet dancer. but he did sit down with martinis, which they got along pretty well.
Seems like they would get along, you know. I mean, and there's scenes in The Bank, Dick. You can kind of tell chemistry when you watch certain films. I mean, it's hard to fake it, you know. I mean, there are actors that are that good that they'll do a romantic scene or a comedy scene and just pull it off. And then afterwards they're like, I can't stand this person. I mean, what comes to mind is the actors who played Fred and Ethel on I Love Lucy. They seemed like they got along really well as a bickering older couple. Well, in real life, they hated each other.
Especially her. I mean, it was her mainly because she hated the idea that they hired him and said, look at how old he is.
Yeah.
He's like 20 years older than me, and he's like an old coot. He tried his best. And by the way, William Frawley, as I like to call him, Fred Mertz, he's in two films with Shemp. They were in two shorts. Okay, I'm going to have to look these up because...
Okay, if you don't have it there, that's fine. I'll trust you that he was in two shorts with Shemp.
Yeah, he was. And he was in...
But I do have a question about The Bank, Dick, since we were kind of talking about that before we got on to William Frawley. So I've heard that story many, many times, is that Shemp was doing little ad-libs and it got all edited out. And I know you'll probably say no, but does any of those outtakes exist anywhere?
I have tried to find them, and I'm very sure there's a couple of historians out there, better historians, because that's not my job, who have been trying. And I don't think they found them yet, because I would love them. I mentioned that whole sequence there, or sequences, I should say, where he's ad-libbing and Fields is just fuming because apparently one of the writers or directors was winking every so often. And I don't know why he had an affliction with winking. And of course, Shemp took that as being, go ahead, you know, do some more ad libs. And so he would. And Fields would be there, oh, no, don't do that. But they did have some fun moments from what I can see.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great movie.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful. And I do. I agree with Ebert. We film critics. We're a nasty bunch. Although I don't associate with any of them in Canada. I don't ever talk to them.
One film I saw over the years, and I'm sure you talk about it in the book, and it surprised me because I was confusing it with another film, but I'm happy I found it because it is Shemp, is Arabian Nights.
Oh yes,
yeah, that was a surprise for me. So, was there four
Oscars?
So was there difficulty, because that was a little more of a straighter role? Was there difficulty in Shemp getting roles like that, or was he like, how did he get movie roles? Do you know anything on that? Was there a consistency? You know, something was placed in front of him. He had an agent. What was going on?
Yeah, he did have agents. In fact, I have a little portion of the book is about agents, and they were very clever. They got him in. One of the reasons he was in Pittsburgh with John Wayne was because John Wayne was not a next door neighbor, but he was a neighbor. And apparently once after the end of after the end of one movie with Broderick Crawford, let me see, was it? Butch minds the baby. His PR crew, you know, his agents decided, I got a great idea. Let's do this bit where we give him an award, a trophy, as being the ugliest man in Hollywood. And of course, a lot of people thought this was real, like, you know, he really is. Well, it was basically done on the set, not during the filming. And, you know, he was awarded a trophy and he was, thank you very much. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know how I do it, but I am just horrifically ugly. And so what did they do when they came out with the advertisements for Pittsburgh? They had Marlena Dietrich, Randolph Scott, John Wayne, and introducing, featuring the ugliest man in Hollywood, Shem Howard. I do believe.
What's that? I said that guy.
It's that guy.
And, not me.
and he has a, it's not like a super huge role, but it's substantial. And it's wild. It's funny. It's not like slapstick to the extent that he would do with the Stooges. He could handle himself. And also, by the way, guess what they got into that involved again? His love of boxing. Mm-hmm. He's sitting in the front row seat at a boxing match all of a sudden, jumping up and down, screaming, just like he did in real life. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful. And Arabian Nights, he and Billy Gilbert, by the way, were very close friends. Mm-hmm. Because Billy Gilbert, for example, had a celebrity baseball team. And Shem apparently would show up occasionally, not to play baseball, but I think he just put on a jersey and sort of rah, 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 and all that. So, I mean, as far as getting these roles, he did have agents. I think they did a pretty good job. He had a number of films with Universal, you know, and Universal was one of the big five and the big four. He went back to Columbia, of course, at some point, which, you know, I think had Curly not gotten ill and died, I think Champ would have continued quite successful as a solo actor, because the reality is, and it's been said many times before, he really didn't want to go back to the Stooges because he was doing quite well. But basically, he knew this was a serious situation. And he really felt family comes first.
Right.
So, you know, bravo to Shemp. He's a decent guy.
Well, he also thought it was temporary, right?
You know, yeah, well, that's just
that Curly would get better and come back. So I'll do this for a couple of years and then go on with my own movie career or whatever.
Yeah. Because, you know, I mean, if Shemp had lived longer, what do I see him as doing? And one of my people in the book says, oh, yeah, he could have been like Harpo Marx, just popping up in cameos all over the place.
Right.
You know, the Lucy show. Did he actually appear on the Lucy show? Or I can't remember. I know he was
Harpo, was on I Love Lucy, yeah.
Yeah, I Love Lucy, okay. Because I'm not a big fan of Lucy. I'm a fan of Lucille Ball, by the way, as a dramatic actress. not terribly keen on her comedies. But anyway, this gent that I was speaking with said, yeah, he could have appeared on all things, all kinds of people from that era, you know, the golden age of the golden era of Hollywood, the golden movies and whatever. He could have made living for the rest of his life, just popping up and everything. He could have been in dramas for that matter, because he can't go.
Yeah.
So,
was there anything during the hiatus from the Stooges that he wanted to get into that for some reason he got turned down, or he just didn't make the cut or whatever?
No, I don't believe. I did check that out because I wondered about that. Like, there were some things, like, for example, I thought with a number of both dramatic and very, very funny actors that appeared in Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream, I thought, oh, Shem could have fit in that beautifully. Right. And he said, but the problem was they were contract players for that particular studio, and he wouldn't have been able to really slip in there as a freelancer. I mean, sometimes it happened, but not always. I don't know of any roles that he actually tried for that he didn't get. I imagine there were a number, but considering the fact that he was in 105, some were shorts and some were features, that's pretty good.
He was working.
I mean, Joe DiRita and Joe Bassett also have a catalog of solo flicks, but yeah. No, that number, absolutely yeah. Nowhere near it.
Right.
And I personally think that having looked at all his work, and I'm prejudiced, obviously, I think Shen was really the more diverse of the original four Stooges. And I don't mean that as a knock on Curly, because I think Curly is a force of nature. I mean, I don't know how he did half that stuff. I mean, yes. He's absolutely brilliant. However, I think to Shem's credit, Shem could do virtually anything, I think. Mm-hmm. He was a great physical comedian. He was a really good ad-libber. Yeah, he could play it straight, as I said. And as you mm-hmm. pointed out, his role in as sort of broken down, sad kind of Sinbad or in the Arabian Nights was a bit of drama there too. So yeah. He was really diverse. I wouldn't say he was the most talented of the bunch, but diversity counts yeah. for a lot, you know?
Yeah. Did he ever do any solo appearances or anything after he rejoined the Stooges, or was it all Stooges the rest of
well,
his life?
Well, actually, yeah, one was in fact Africa Screams.
Oh, that's right, Africa Screams.
He was back with the Stooges. From what I understand, and I'm almost, well, I'm certain about this, no, he did not do any other solo work. Okay. And that one was on, that was, there was no hassle about it. You know, this is yet another, where another story came out, either back then in print, and of course now on the internet, and you don't know who the sources are, because, well, there are really no sources. It's just rumors, and let's make up something today that's going to sort of stir it up.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, no, I don't, and it's too bad. Yeah. He really died at the wrong time.
Right, and it is true the way he died. You know, that's described in the book. You know,
yes,
he was in the back of a car and slumped yeah. over. You know,
he was in the back of a taxi, yeah. and he was telling a joke to one of his buddies. I think there was two of them that night, and he lit up a cigar. Started to tell a joke and he dropped into one of their laps and he just died. And of course, they thought he was joking. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's funny, Shemp. What are you doing? No, no, he was.
And he died instantly. He didn't, like, no, they didn't get him to the hospital or anything.
He died when, you know, I think he was officially declared dead when they got to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And no, he did not die of a massive heart attack. He yeah. died of a cerebral hemorrhage.
Yeah.
That's the official story. And like I said, too bad, because I thought some of his later films, especially his solo work, I thought they were great fun. And you sort of alluded to the Brideless Groom, and I mentioned Christine McIntyre. Yeah. She did some solos with Short too, with Shemp too, yeah. and I love her. She's absolutely one of the greatest.
It's almost like as if they both had, well, she lived into the 80s, but if he had lived,
yeah.
like, they could make some sort of goofy sitcom, like, in the late 50s, early 60s, yeah. you know, that just seems yeah. like perfect, you know, a husband and wife, you know, it could be like a yeah. Blondie series, but with, you know,
yeah,
you know, but
and there
speculation,
you, go.
He, you know. You know?
He was in a Blondie film, too, Shin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had quite a sizable role.
Right.
But a funny role, so.
Yeah.
It's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of other ones too. Like, this is terrible. I'm forgetting his name now. Georgie Jessel. Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone knew him as a talker. He could really, really lay it on thick. And you don't think that he's ever going to be out talked or out hustled. And he was in a short, and Shemp was in it. He played an agent, and basically Jessel just sort of stood there. Well, Shemp rattled all this little deal he was going to make. But, you know, you got to have a beautiful woman in your act, too. Da-da-da-da-da-da. And it was wonderful. I thought,
yeah.
And Jessel was fine. I liked him, too. But there was Shemp. He was out-jestling Georgie Jessel. it was wonderful. You know? there's so much, you know. And the Charlie Chan film, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Such a Just a short bit.
I'm forgetting all these things. See, I've seen him, but not in recent times. I've seen him just over the years. And I go, oh, there's Shemp in it. Charlie Chan film. Yeah. Oh, there's Shemp in it. Blondie. And then when you say it again, I go, oh, yeah, I've seen those.
Yeah, he's there. He's everywhere.
Yeah.
This is what I liked. And his work with the Andrews sisters, when he did at the end of Private Buckaroo, he gets up there. I think it's one sits under the apple tree. I can't remember the song. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I do a little bit of a dance. It's kind of like who was also in that film, Donald O'Connor. I was going to say he was the, kind of like a mini Donald O'Connor. So he could do it. He could do the shtick. He could do a little, little bit of dancing and a little bit of sort of singing. And comedic stuff, and he was great.
Yeah. It's too bad he didn't live like 10 or 15 more years,
It makes me sad, but I don't know. I guess like someone said, well, you know something? He kind of died where it was almost natural because he just got back from the fights. He was with his buddies, and he was lighting up a cigar, and, I guess he died happy, I suppose.
Yeah.
But nowadays, when we're I'm 13 years older than Shemp was. You know, and I'm not ready yet. Mm-hmm. So, I want this book to be a really big hit so I can be happy. So, thank you to all you people in the United States because you're all buying it. I haven't gotten too many calls or emails or messages from Canadians saying, yes, we ran out.
Well, that's why my original question was like, was this a hit in Canada? But you mentioned you saw it in Buffalo and it's like, okay, and, so, okay, well, you get the TV over the border, that's fine.
as soon as I renew my passport, which I haven't done yet, and I get my old car, which is probably, well, it's not in years, but it's older than me. Once I get that in working order, I'm going to ask my publisher, well, what's the scoop on doing some signings?
Yeah.
Because there's some potential there. I don't know that part of the whole process, but I'd love to do it.
Well, I can tell you this because I've been published by Bear Manor and Ben many, many times. There's certain conventions he does. If he doesn't do it personally, he has people doing them for him. The big one every year, and it's in September, is the Mid-Atlantic convention. I'd recommend that. I'm planning to go there one of these years, and I may go this next time in next September.
We might meet then. Well, I you're in where are you now? You're in
Los Angeles? I'm in Oregon nowadays.
You're Oregon. Okay, yeah. I'm getting my times mixed up because now. Yeah.
I was in LA when I was a kid, but then I moved back to. I'm a California person for the most part, and then 8 years ago I moved to Oregon, so that's where I'm at.
So, are you still 3 hours ahead of us, like they are in California, or not?
Where are you in Canada again?
I'm in Ontario, Eastern Standard Time.
Okay, so it's 3 hours. I'm Pacific time, so yeah.
Okay, yeah. I've done an awful lot of kibitzing and chatting, and very thankful for her help with me with Jill Howard, and Jerry's been good too.
Yeah,
and Sandy has contributed a few things.
And then I know there's that big Stooges convention that's like in Pennsylvania every year. I've never been there, but I mean, I think your book would be a hit there. So get your passport. Definitely do. So maybe a Hollywood show might work for you. I don't know, or New York show. Well, I don't know. It depends on what it is. Yeah,
I'm not sure how I do that. I think the best way that I could save money, because I'm not sure if anyone's going to give me any money to travel that far, I could hitchhike across the entire country. I don't know. I'd like to do it in Los Angeles. The reason is I like doing it in New York State because that's where they're from.
Yeah.
And that makes sense to me. And I like to do it in LA because eventually that's where they ended up. And that's where they were a huge success.
Yeah.
And,
but the reason I say Pennsylvania, that's where the Stoogeum is. So you could do a signing there, things like that, So
I haven't even
been to those places. I want to go. When I was talking to Gary, I said, what's in the Stoogeum? Because he's the one who founded it. He's telling me all these things and I'm all salivating. I want to go.
I went down there. I've been down a couple of times. I interviewed And you're right, it's just outside of Philadelphia, and it's very nice. And I know, I guess the issue is I just got to chat with my publisher first and see what the deal is, you know. I know, for example, we have a big national book company here, Indigo. It used to be called Chapters. It's nationwide. And we live just down the road from London, Ontario.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to arrange something there because Stooges, they're still popular. And, you know, yeah, Canada still likes them. I have to kick a little behind. You know, I know I probably say kick you know what, but I figure I'll keep it clean. So, okay. And once we do that, you know what it's all about, but I am truly an obsessive fanatic, and I have been at my ripe old age sleeping about 2 hours a night for the last since the book was released, and I have been answering every single comment I get on email, on my email or on Facebook, and I have been calling magazines and newspapers and saying, are you interested in the story? This is the first book. No one's ever done it. Grab it now before there's any more. And you know, I said, in fact, I'm a freelance writer. I'll write it for you if you like. Mm-hmm. As long as you pay me a little bit. And I don't know. Who's the London Free Press here down the road? They said, yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, I used to be a theater critic for them. So, you know, they're happy.
Oh, I know a magazine you can pitch. And I know the guy who runs it is Retro Fan. And Michael Urie is the guy's name, Eury.
Okay.
He's the editor. The publisher is Two Morrows. I think they're based in North Carolina, if memory serves, but you don't have to go to North Carolina. You do it because I write for their other publication called Back Issue about comic books and stuff like that. But they have a magazine that gets on the newsstands, at least down here, called Retro Fan, and they write about anything and everything. There's also a magazine in Europe or in England, and I can't think of the name of it. I buy it all the time, and I think it's called Imagine or something like that. But they do a lot of weird pop culture stuff too. So you never know, you know.
I tried the big ones too, like, and I haven't heard anything back. But I haven't been rejected, and that's like the LA Times, or Variety, the Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll say what?
Yeah. And then there's other niche magazines like Nostalgia Digest. They might be interested in something like that. You could do the monsters angle since Stooges and Shemp did different monster films. You know, you know, there's Scary Monsters and other magazines like that. So there's stuff out there. So, you know, the sky's the limit of what you want to do. You know, you just have to be a little creative with it. So
it gives me a break from, you know, like, well, I do, like I said, I am working on two other books, but normally what I'm doing is Shakespearean theater reviews at a festival here every year. And that's really big across North America. And I'm a business reporter, even though I'm the world's worst business person. And I do agricultural writing, and I always kid about that. I said, well, you know, something, I used to be a groundskeeper assistant, and I know how to drive a tractor. So they said, okay, that's cool. We'll talk to you. So that's the kind of stuff I do normally. Entertainment is what I really enjoyed the most. I love being a movie critic. But unfortunately, these days, with the internet, everyone thinks they're a movie critic.
And, right.
You know, if you try to be serious, and what you get is you get a lot of, like violently thumbs down and absurdly up, and they don't seem to make any real sense. They just sound like exuberant fans.
Yeah. Really, well, a lot of times nowadays, it's a film doesn't even have to come out, and people are always panning it. You know, good example in the last few years is the female Ghostbusters film, which I don't mind, but it had so much bad publicity by fans of the franchise for years that, you know, you thought it'd be the worst movie ever made. I mean, it's like, no.
Well, one person who is in the book, and I won't say how many, But several people have died since I started writing this book who are in my book. One of them is Gilbert Gottfried.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a huge Stooge fan. And I had one of the best interviews I had with him. I just let him roll on because he'd come back from, you know, a performance the night before, and he was waking up early just to do an interview with me. And he basically did a shtick.
Yeah.
And it was wonderful. And I didn't have to sort of ask. Well, I did ask a couple of questions, but he was just absolutely wonderful. And I got, by the way, he's 97, but when I got him, he was more than 93. I got Shecky Green, who actually knew Shannon. So he's in my book.
Wow. I think I missed that one, but I need to actually properly read it. I'm just like glossing over it. So at least I knew what it was about. I mean, I noticed you have it set up in an interesting way. Like you have a chapter like all of Shemp's homes and photos of them, which is interesting. What you were talking about, the latter third, I guess, of the book is like different people's recollections and contacts and things like that.
This is my logic. I did two chapters. One was, I don't know why I called it this. It might have Stars Love Shemp. I don't know. But that might be it. Second one was Academics Applause. Okay, well, my whole concept, the goal was, I wanted to say, not only was Shemp popular then, he's still popular now. Well, I have to prove that. I just can't say that and put in an isolated comment. So I went out, and I'm telling you, this took me so long because so many people did not return my calls. Yeah. But I got some great people. I got Dick Cavett.
Yeah.
I got, because he's a big nostalgia person. I got Gilbert Gottfried, I got Shecky Green. Gilbert was dies like several months after I talked with him, which stunned me. I got some good names.
You got Drew Friedman, which he is like Shemp fan number one almost.
Oh, he's the Shemp artist. Yeah. I did a chapter, the last chapter actually is essentially him.
Yeah.
And wonderful guy. To speak with him that, and the academics I got, and that sort of was really top of my mind. I thought, you know something, academics don't really dislike things like the Three Stooges. They just don't want to admit it. I mean, the guy who wrote
they're like women.
The guy who wrote the Stoogeology, Peter Seely. I mean, he's a liberal arts professor in Chicago. He's also a cousin of a friend of ours up here in Canada. And I got him, and he chatted, and he says, you know, I got to be honest with you. I said, I know our book has got Curly Larry Morrison, but over the years, as I've aged, he says, I'm really a Shemp fan now. And I thought, wonderful. I said, go ahead, speak. And so I got some good academics. I think I've got some good top flight stars and some ones, I got some women in there. I got Paula Poundstone, by the way, which, you know, very funny, sort of, I don't know what kind of comic you'd call her. She's quite clever. Clever. And she's female. That's what I like about it. Yeah. And I just wanted to explore different areas. I didn't want to make this. Shemp is a really fine fellow. He's never been written about. He was born. He did this. He did this. A couple of people liked him, and then he died. I thought, I want to sort of write this in a way that sort of, if I'm going to be saying something or I'm implying something, then I want to have people with some expertise, like people like yourself, making a comment. And you know, and then people saying, oh, really?
Yeah.
He liked the Stooges?
What's wrong with them?
What are these people? Are they crazy? And but you know, people have just said, you know, and not necessarily being quoted in my book, but the reality is this is the 100th anniversary of the beginnings of the Three Stooges.
Yeah.
Thanks to Ted Healy. And I feel kind of privileged in a way to be writing this first book and also be doing it in the 100th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And I want to keep doing this because, like I said, just for a few more months, No competition yet. And I'm sure, by the way, I'm sure, and I'm going to buy it. I'm sure the book's going to be, you know, quite good, very good. Not as good as mine, but still. He's better known than I am, for sure. I know who he is.
Yeah,
he's American, and I'm a Canadian. Oh, a Brit turned Canadian.
So, like I said, you know, it's like there's always room for more than one book. I mean, we mentioned Nick Santa Maria is a good friend of mine. He co-authored a Abbott and Costello book. That wasn't the first Abbott and Costello book. You know, there's a couple more, but there hasn't been a good one in a long time. So, you know, it was welcome to have another good book, you know. So there you go. Now, I would be upset with your Shemp book if it was not thoroughly researched and you know, made up crap and stuff like that, then I'd be like, all right, well, we'll shove this one under the carpet and go to the next person. But you know, you did a good job on it. I like the idea that you had all the comments by the different people, the different wide cross section of people, because you know, we got to find out who this person is other than just he was just one of the stooges. Yeah, because that's how a lot of people think. Oh, he was a stooge that replaced Curly, you know, and that's all they know, you know. And it's like, more than that, you know.
I'm having fun. And I mean, you know, I guess my ultimate goal, and this is never going to happen either. I'm doing this. I'm Mr. Half Empty. Is I would love one of the American talk show hosts to say, come on down here. This is a good topic. I don't know who it'd be. I don't watch the talk shows much anymore.
Well, I mean, if one of the nighttime guys is a big enough stooge fan, he might contact you, you know.
Yeah, well,
Fallon or Kilmel or, you know.
Yeah, I like him.
Colbert or any of them, so you never know. So.
Yeah, Colbert and Kilbert. Getting a little late here, you know.
Easier for you to say.
We get tired very early.
Yes.
I would love to do that because it would be fun, and I could wear my Shemp shirt. And, you know, embarrass myself nationally, not in Canada, but in the States too. Yeah. That would be great fun. This has been so much fun to do it. And it's been a major, major part of my my life. By the way, did we mention also It Ain't Hay with Abbott and Costello?
No, but
okay, that's another one. That's a biggie. It Ain't Hay is one of a famous, this is awful. If it were 2 hours early, I'd remember a famous author wrote this, the original text, and they made the movie on it. Mm-hmm. One of the great writers in the, this is terrible. People are saying, why did you get this stumble bum on your show? You can't
remember. Isn't it Damon Runyon or something like that?
Yeah, it's Damon Runyon, just like Damon Runyon also wrote Butch Marks the Baby. Didn't he? Anyway, so there, he was in that. It didn't have a terribly big part, but quite funny. Very humorous.
That's why I forgot that one. I had written down the other ones, but not that one.
Five films. I think that to me, like when people say, "Oh, Costello, I hate it." Basically what they're saying is Costello couldn't stand the Stooges because they feel that Curly stole the Stooges said that Costello stole Curly's high-pitched sort of stuff. That's not true. That's completely not true. And it's also not true that the Stooges hated Abbott and Costello and vice versa. I mean, they may have had some words at some point, but it's just not true.
And a lot of it is just vaudeville shtick that everybody did. So you can't say Costello did this first or Curly did this first. It's like, you know, it was around in the culture.
Everyone thinks that the Three Stooges invented the Niagara Falls bit. Slowly I turned. No, they didn't. That was famous on vaudeville. Yeah. And the other reason is if Costello and Abbott disliked Shemp, like some people think they did because of his association with Stooges, then why was he in five films with them?
Right.
And why would...
Bet if this ever happened, but it didn't, obviously, if Curly had left the group just because he was tired of doing it, they might have had him being in Abbott and Costello films. Why not? You know, it's like, I think a lot of it had to do with Shemp being solo. And, you know, it's like, hey, he's available. Let's get him. He's funny. We like him.
and Abbott, I mean, quite frankly, as I said, he thought he was, he was one of the great comedic talents, but he was hugely wasted on those dreadful comedy shorts that Columbia was putting out. A lot of people.
Yeah. But although I do like some of them, admittedly, you know.
I do. I like some of them. Yeah. Like I like Charlie Chase made a few for Columbia, didn't he?
Yeah.
Or did he? Yeah. I mean, I'm Charlie Chase is one of my faves. I really like him. He's good. Mm-hmm. But Shemp, you know, if you've got time to watch 105 of his movies soon, you know, maybe what I'll do.
I do.
You say you're down in Oregon, right?
Yes.
Okay, right. Did I pronounce that right? Because I have
no. Everybody outside of Oregon, it's like a gun. Yeah. It says Oregon, but you know, it's like that's just the way it is.
If I go back to England and live there for a few more months or years, and I get my English accent back, then I'll be pronouncing everything differently, and I will bring Champ Howard back to England with me in form of a book.
Very good. All right. Well, we'll conclude here. It's been great talking with you. And I look forward to whatever future book you're writing. You don't have to mention them now. We'll keep them under wraps.
Okay.
It was great having you on the show. And I want to thank you, Jeff, for all the information about Shemp. And
it was a pleasure. And I thank you for having me. And it's been fun. Podcasts are a lot of fun. You do a good job. Oh my God, you do a damn sight better job than I do.
Well, thank you very much.
Get any questions out.
I'll let you have the last word and then I'll say goodbye. So give a quick plug for the book one more time and how people can get it.
Okay, well, you can get it by go to Facebook and just Google Much More Than a Stooge, Shemp Howard. It'll come up somewhere and you'll see the links either to getting a paperback or a hardback from Bear Manor Media. And please buy it and please make it a number one bestseller. And by the way, apparently according to Ben, right now we're named before a book on the movie Aeroplane on Amazon. So we're actually mentioned first. So wow. Empathy Zerping, one of my favorite films of the last 20 years. So I do truly love nonsense like that. So please go out and buy my book and I'll thank you. And you'll actually, if you write a little note to me on Facebook, you'll get a response because I generally do that. I'm that obsessive. I'm such a silly fellow.
All right. Okay. On that note, that concludes this episode of the Fun Ideas Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Arnold, and we will see you next time.
Thank you for listening, and thank you, Jeff Dale, for being my special guest. Remember, you can always watch the video version of this episode on YouTube. Episode number 239 will be coming soon. If you would like to comment and or be a guest on this podcast, please drop me a line at funideas.mark@gmail.com. Become a patron of Mark Arnold and Fun Ideas Productions. If everyone listening just contributed $1 a month, that would be a tremendous help in continuing the production of my books and this podcast. Also, subscribe to my YouTube channel. The opening and closing music for the Fun Ideas Podcast is provided courtesy of Andrew the Slow Poisoner Goldfarb and is used with permission. This has been the Fun Ideas Podcast. This is Mark Arnold speaking. This episode is copyright 2022. Fun Ideas Productions. Thank you and good night.